Now this is lesson number 6, page 55 in our book, Revelation Translation and Commentary, Volume 2. Now, we have been dealing with these horses sent out. We had started on the second seal, and we were at the top of page 55, and we'll begin there with item number 6. In King James, the word kill should be slay. King James has translated 6 Greek words, kill. Now, you know, you find me always raising these complaints, that these bad translations, but unless you keep listening to what's going on the radio and listen to how people are using verses, you don't realize how serious a thing is going on. But because they've done this way, this is why they're not allowing them to execute murderers. And see, they're trying to make it look as though the Ten Commandments meant that you shouldn't have a war and you shouldn't kill anybody in a war, instead of the word which means murder, thou shalt not kill, they've got. Well, it doesn't mean, it isn't thou shalt not kill, it's thou shalt not murder. And this is a whole lot different than a war, which God did sanction in many cases. So if you've got 6 different Greek words, all kill, you can see how it leads us into difficulty. This particular word, svato, is translated slay 8 times in King James. Cain slew Abel, 1 John 3:12, the lamb was slain, and so forth. So it isn't as though they were using kill for it all the time. It isn't. They used slay for it a great deal of the time, 8 times actually. And they should have left it slay, because otherwise you go to kill and you've got a different idea back of it. 7. The calf characteristic of the second living creature is the idea of sacrifice. See Isaiah 34, 6 and 7 above. Put together a few of these things. The horse is red for blood. The sword is better as dagger of an assassin or murderer. The verb is slay, as slaughtered, murdered, peace to be taken out of the earth. Finally, they will slay one another. Not the idea of war, but terrorism. We are certainly going deeper and deeper into this condition. One underlying question, when did these horsemen start their ride? That's what we're going to try and explore a little bit this morning. Verse 5. And when he opened the seal, namely the third, I heard of the third living creature saying, you go. And I saw, and behold, a black horse, and the one sitting on it, holding a yoke in his hand. Verse 6, page 56. And I heard as a voice in midst of the four living creatures saying, now this isn't one of the living creatures apparently that says this. I don't know, this is a measure, I've transliterated the measure in measures and money of the Greek text. I have elected to simply transliterate the Greek word. I think it's far safer. The minute you start to translate measures of volume or money or time, when you start translating those, you're asking for trouble, because we're not sure what some of those things were. For example, in the Living Bible and in Good News for Modern Man, they did that. They translated designations of time into our hours, with the net result that both of those translations have Jesus Christ crucified at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then he comes down from the cross and gets judged by Pilate at 12 o'clock noon. Now something's all wrong with that kind of a mess. Well, that's what you do when you translate. We're not as sure of some of these measures as we like to think we are, and time is one of the worst of them. But here, this is a you see the word, let's go up to the word in the interlinear, because it's easy to see. It's the first word at the top of the page, the Greek word. key. That's a C-H. You transliterate it, C-H, then O-I, and in this case, brings it over a little better, O-E, and that's an N, then an I, and then an X for that kasi. We don't have a letter like that, so we can't transliterate it exactly. And so you could say it koinix, something like that. Koinixi, if you're doing Greek, that's fine. But I can't get it over quite equal in English. And so I transliterated it. Now, you'll see why in a minute that I want to stick this way on these words. And this voice said, a koinix of wheat for a denarius. Now, they've got, I think, in most of these, they've got a penny. Let's see, go back to your six, let's see. A penny, yes, they've got penny in the King James. And so, you see, now that is a British piece of money. The King James was done in England, and they translated all of these into British currency. Well, of course, values change, everything changes, and then they assume that it was a penny. Well, it wasn't a penny. It wasn't anywhere near a penny. And so the point is that by translating those kind of measures, we introduce a lot of error, and then we hide some things. Because this is a particular horse that I'm real anxious to show you this morning, because I've had to back up and turn around and go off in a new direction altogether on this horse as I began to look at these things. Now, this koinix of wheat is much more the idea of what we would measure wheat by, like the bushel. Not equal in value, I'm not saying that, but it's a bulk measure, like we have bushels of wheat. So it's a bulk measure. Now keep that in mind a minute. For a denarius. Now, a denarius is a coin. And I got a picture of it right down here that you can see right on the same page. A denarius is a coin. Now watch. And three koinixes of barley, another grain, for a denarius. And might you not harm the oil and the wine. Now, since the oil and the wine aren't to be harmed, it would look like there's plenty of those. Yet, we have always, I say we, because I taught this same thing. What I'm breaking away from is what I once taught. I've admitted that over and over again. I feel for the poor people that used to be at Pleasant Valley Baptist Church. I feel for them because I led them down an alley that I could not now support. I know that. But after all, I'm not totally responsible because I had people leading me down the same alley. So you see, this is our trouble. We've taken what somebody else said. I might digress to tell you this because you may never know it if I don't tell it to you, but I had real hopes. You know, when they go to the seminaries, they write master's theses, and they have a given subject, and they write and they put copies of these in the library. That's part of their requirement. And then when they get a PhD, then they write quite a big fair and research that, and they put that in the library. Well, I was in great hopes that when I visited this particular seminary that I would be able to look at these where people had select material, shall I say. In other words, never printed. They don't exist in books. They only exist in these doctorate and master's theses. And so I thought, well, I'll be able to look up my passages and I'll get a lot of help. But what did I find? I simply looked in there and he said, this means thus and so because Joe said it last year and Bill said it the year before and Sam said it the year before that. Where did Sam get it? He invented it. And so where did it all come from? They don't know. It didn't come out of the Bible at all. They just copied. And then I found to my amazement that, and I didn't say it meaning to be smart at all. That was the least I wanted to be. They'd ask me, well, where do you get this in the book, The Law Prophesied? Where do you get this? What did you use for your authority? And then I would tell them the scripture. That's what the scripture says. Oh, well, that, you know, that just sort of doesn't count. What did so-and-so say about it? What's he got in his? And, well, that isn't what I cared about. But I found out that they wouldn't pass these fellows unless they copied this great big list of sources of other people. And so what happens, we are led up these alleys by people copying one another who is represented as authority. So they've taught this, and that's why I said they've taught that this horse represented hunger and famine. And so you see, it's come right down the line nicely. They said the first one is either Christ or Antichrist. They disagree on that. And then the next horse is going to be war, and the next horse is going to be famine as a result of the war. Now, that's all well and good, except that the second horse doesn't match that at all. And I got wise to that after a while, just pondering the scripture. But I didn't catch on to this one. And I told some of you right here, we used to talk about it. I don't think it's on any tape or anything, but we used to talk about that horse, about the black horse, and about the possibility of it being the fact of equalizing, scales in his hands, and equalizing, the giving to the have-nots and the pulling down the haves, and all of this came about by the third world, so to speak, and the black idea. Well, as I began working on this, I found that's not right at all. That isn't even close. But why was I led astray like this? That's what I want to show you, so you'll know. You see, I was having several problems. Now, let's go. You'll see them in a minute. The third seal. Now, Zugos, you see? Wait a minute. Go back to page 55, verse 5. A minute. Now, see what it says there in the last half of the verse. I saw, and behold, a black horse, and the one sitting on it holding a yoke in his hand. Now, if you look at the King James, verse 5, on page 56, you've got pair of balances in his hand for one word. And the as American Standard improved that, they cut it down. There's nothing for pair. So they put a balance in his hand. But now look at this word a minute. That's the word zugos I've got right there. Zugos, is it yoke or balance? The word is translated yoke in the New Testament five times. And this is the only place they ever changed it. On whose authority do you go changing it one place? To me, you're just jumping off the edge of the cliff. Now, for instance, here it is in Matthew 11:29. Take my yoke upon you. Did he say, take my balance upon you? Of course he didn't. And learn of me. For I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my balance is easy, my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. So it's a yoke, not a balance at all. Now, yoke in the New Testament is always in the figurative sense. And I give you the other scriptures. I only put one in, but they're all there. Are we justified in translating the word balance? The idea of balance comes in from verse 6. You see, now reasoning, looking at it from a human being and not analyzing scripture, not reading the Greek, they look at it and they say, a measure of wheat for a penny and three measures of barley for a penny, and they say, well, you got to balance this out. See, they're going to weigh it out and dole it out, so it means famine. There's not enough to go around. Well, that sounds good, but again, we're not thinking. They aren't farmers. They're not farmers. You got to think. A koinex of wheat, a bushel of wheat, you don't have to weigh bushels. If I come and get from you a bushel of corn, you measure me a bushel and give me a bushel of corn. And you don't weigh a dollar coin. You don't weigh it to see what it is. You don't put the dollar coin on one side and the wheat on the other side. They're not things you weigh. They're both. So there was no real reason for introducing balance. And there's no real reason, since it's never meaning balance anywhere else in the scripture, why in the world do you make it balance one time? Now, changing that to yoke made me rethink, made me start all over again. Now I've got some more problems. Let's go further. Should we understand this? Well, let's go to the idea back there again. The idea of balance comes in from verse 6, but a denarius is a coin, not a weight. There it is in front of you. Should we understand this as a Jewish or Roman denarius? We don't know that. Is it possible that Israel will again issue the denarius, as they already have the shekel? I just put that in as an interesting sideline. It's just something you can watch for, that that's a possibility that they will again issue the denarius for use in the temple. Just kind of put it away. We don't know they will. The koinex is said to be a dry measure, so this also is not weighed. I have translated yoke rather than balance. Let us see where this might lead us. The yoke is connected with Israel's servitude, especially in the last days. The yoke is closely connected with the time of Jacob's trouble. Now look at Leviticus 26:13. I am Jehovah your God, who brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, that ye should not be their bondmen. And I have broken the bars of your yoke and made you go upright. All right, look at Ezekiel 34:27. And the tree of the field shall yield its fruit. The earth shall yield its increase. They shall be secure in their land. They shall know that I am Jehovah when I have broken the bars of their yoke. So breaking the bars of their yoke is going to mean security for them, not famine. That's directly the wrong direction I was going. Well, watch carefully. And have delivered them out of the hand of those that made bondmen of them. And they shall no more be a prey to the nations. Neither shall the beasts of the earth devour them, but they shall dwell securely, and none shall make them afraid. Well, you see, we already had another problem, because we've got this voice speaking from the midst of the four living creatures, and it's saying, hurt not the oil nor the wine. Well, that looks like there's plenty of those. And here we are making the grain scarce. Why? You see, we didn't have any authority for it, really. Now look a little further. Now the word denarius occurs 16 times in the New Testament. Jeremiah 30, I want you to look at Jacob's trouble, because that goes with a page ahead of it a minute. Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is even the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. And it shall come to pass in that day, saith Jehovah of hosts. And we equate Jacob's trouble, you remember, with the Holocaust of Germany, that I will break his yoke from off thy neck, and I will burst thy bonds, and strangers shall no more make him their bondman, but they shall serve Jehovah their God, and David their king, whom I will raise up unto them. Therefore, fear thou not, O Jacob, my servant, saith Jehovah, neither be dismayed, O Israel. For lo, I will save thee from afar, and thy seed from the land of their captivity, and Jacob shall return, and shall be quiet and at ease, and none shall make him afraid. For I am with thee, saith Jehovah, to save thee, for I will make a full end of all the nations whither I have scattered thee, but I will not make a full end of thee. And I will correct thee in measure, and will in no wise leave thee unpunished. And so here we're taking a different look at things. Now let's go to the denarius over in Matthew 22. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a shilling a day, that's a denarius, he sent them into his vineyard. Now see, there's translating again, because you see, it's King James, done in England, so he puts it into the shilling. And of course, when you get to English, that doesn't mean anything to us at all, because we're not used to shillings. So that doesn't mean anything. So that just got lost. Whereas, if they'd left it denarius, then the people who want to study this area of Scripture would have looked up denarius in a Bible dictionary. And in the Bible dictionary, it would have shown you pictures of the denarii, and it would have told you, now this is worth about so much money. There was a gold denarii, there's a silver denarii, there's a Jewish denarii, a Roman denarii. And then you could know a little bit more about it. And it would make a whole lot more sense than going into British shillings, which meant nothing. From Matthew, we learn that a denarius at that time was a day's pay. Now, that was interesting. We learned that much, that regardless of what kind of a denarius it was the day's pay at that point. The word koinex only occurs in the New Testament in verse 6 above. That's the only place commentators tell us that the koinex was a measure of wheat. That's the only place we've got it. That was sufficient for a soldier's daily ration. Now, that's what the commentaries say. That it was a measure of wheat sufficient for the daily ration. Well, now that helped, because we now promptly said that a koinex was wheat. He was able, with his day's wages, to buy a measure of wheat, and therefore it's sort of a balancing, not so much famine as a balancing. He got enough to eat. But should we take secular references if we can find a Bible explanation? This word clinics does occur three times in the Septuagint. For the Hebrew, bath. All uses are in one passage of Ezekiel 45, 10 and 11, and this still future at the time of the new temple. Interesting. Now look at this. Ezekiel 45, 10. Ye shall have just balances. Now this is when the temple is rebuilt. And a just ephah and a just bath. Now see, they didn't change those. In the Old Testament, they left them stand transliterating the Hebrew. They let them alone. The ephah and the bath shall be of one measure. Those are both equal. Why they had different names, I can't tell you. That the bath may contain the tenth part of an homer. Now look out, there's a homer and an omer. You don't want to get tangled up with those. And the ephah, the tenth part of a homer. The measure thereof shall be after the homer. All right, and you have to take a look at this carefully. Now, I tried to do some arithmetic for you. A bath, a koinex, is equal to a bath in the Septuagint. I told you that there, ephah and a bath, because the Septuagint has the word koinex in there in place of bath. So we have an ephah equal to the bath equals a tenth of a homer. See, it tells you right there, a tenth of a homer. And I've got the word homer in Hebrew there. Both bath and ephah are equal. That's what we define there. Now let's go further to Exodus 16. This is the thing which Jehovah hath commanded. Gather ye of it. This is the manna. Now they're gathering the manna. Every man according to his eating. An omer, a head. Now I wonder, did you see the difference? So you see there is a little difference. The first letter is different. You see the homer and the omer? See that little difference? The first letter Hebrew is different. According to the number of your persons shall ye take it, every man for them that are in his tent. So it was enough to feed a man for a day, this omer. Now, an omer is the tenth part of an ephah. So one omer equals a tenth of an ephah, or from Ezekiel 45:11, since a bath and ephah are equal, one omer is a tenth of a bath, or a tenth of a koinex. Did you follow that arithmetic? If you can't, you can do it later. This doesn't seem to indicate even scarcity. If a day's pay will buy 10 times as much wheat and 30 times as much barley as a person would need to eat, this pronouncement is made as a voice in the midst of the four living creatures. The voice further says, might you not harm the oil and the wine? The word oil may be olive oil, but this word is used for any oil or fatty fluid. Theological Dictionary of the New Testament. It's used for cod liver oil. It's used for butter. Consider the fact that the horse is black. How do Jews understand black? See, maybe that'll give us a tip in the right direction. Not how do we understand black. How do they understand black? Okay? Here's the Song of Solomon, page 58. I am black but comely, comely, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar, as the curtains of Solomon. Now, Zohar, which are one of the spiritual type books of Israel, says, Rabbi Judah opened with the words, I am black but comely. He said that they refer to the community of Israel who is black because of her captivity. Now, why not take some Jewish authority instead of making things up as we go along? Okay? The Talmud, Baba Kama, page 343 says, what ground have you for wearing black shoes? He said to them, I am mourning for Jerusalem. What do you think of that? Now, the Talmud in Yoma, look at this. The cell of hewn stone where the Sanhedrin of Israel was sitting and judging the priests, and whosoever was found unfit would put on a black dress and wrap himself in black, go out and go his way. and one in whom no blemish was found would put on a white garment, wrap himself in white, enter the sanctuary, and officiate with his brethren. Thus black indicates unfitness, and for this reason Israel has been in captivity. And thus black is connected with mourning. And it is too in ours. When you stop and think a minute, it's connected with ours. But here it is laid down in the Talmud and the Zohar clearly. Remember one more thing. This rider is sent forth by the third living creature having the face of a man. Now God's face has been hidden from Israel, but God will no longer hide his face when we get to this point. For Jehovah hath called thee as a wife forsaken, this is Isaiah 54, and grieved in spirit, even a wife of youth, when she is cast off, saith thy God. For a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. In overflowing wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but with everlasting loving kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith Jehovah thy Redeemer. Okay, now look at Ezekiel 39. Therefore thus saith the Lord Jehovah, now will I bring back the captivity of Jacob. Have mercy upon the whole house of Israel. I will be jealous for my holy name. They shall bear their shame and all their trespasses whereby they have trespassed against me, when they shall dwell securely in their land, and none shall make them afraid. When I have brought them back from the peoples, and gathered them out of their enemies' lands, and am sanctified in them in the sight of many nations, and they shall know that I am Jehovah their God, and that I caused them to go into captivity among the nations, and have gathered them into their own land, and I will leave none of them any more there. Neither will I hide my face any more from them, for I have poured out my spirit upon the house of Israel, saith the Lord Jehovah. So here you see the black horse taking some turns. So as I see the black horse now, I see the black horse as representing again Israel, this third horse. So you're going to see a chart in a minute where I'm going to put horse 1 and 3 together and horses 2 and 4 together. And this third horse is black horse with God removing their yoke, bringing them back into the land, and their land beginning to produce plenty. But their captivity won't change, their mourning won't change, because they have in another passage that says they will mourn for him as one mourns for an only son, until that time comes when the Lord appears in the cloud and they look on him whom they pierced, and then all Israel will be saved. They'll weep for him, mourn for him right up to there. So it's shown as a black horse, but plenty, plenty. 10 times and 30 times what they need, and hurt not the oil and wine. And then you have a promise, I think it's Asher. Asher shall dip his foot in oil. So they've gone into the territory of Asher, and that's where they're striking oil. And they expect that they'll get oil, and this, I think, is that oil. I don't think he's talking about olive oil, because that word, olive, it does mean olive oil, but they use it for all oil. They use it for oil, every kind of oil. And I think that's the oil and the wine. Now, wine is an inclusive type of term. And you could use all different labels and names of liquors, but you know those are two things you don't touch. You don't touch liquor and you don't touch oil. And if you do, you get in trouble. But you just don't touch those. You haven't been able. Why? Do you know if you could shut off all the liquor manufacturing in the world, it will feed the world? The grains will feed the world, but you can't shut it off. Even if you shut it off from the Southern Baptists, they'd go out of business. And so you can't shut it off, and you can't hurt the oil. You can't. You try it. Try interfering. Look at what we're headed for by Monday. Why are the Falkland Islands important? Oil. It isn't the sheep. They've got a few thousand sheep, but they're not going to go to war over the sheep. They're going to go to war over that oil. And Argentina has heard that they have struck a pretty good chance of really an enormous field of oil. And they're going to latch on to that. That's why they're taking it. That's too easy to see. There's nobody quibbling about that. And England wants the oil too, so they're going to go back and get it. So hurt not the oil nor the wine. And we're going to see a lot more of that before we get there, but it's Israel's oil and wine that we're interested in. Thank you.